For August the 25th, 2023, we talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Fortnite, Atomic Heart, and much more. Welcome to Level 470. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
Dramatic pause on Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. My voice has been going on a journey today. I started out all raspy because I was spending a bunch of time outside doing yard work. And I guess like a bunch of pollen came in. So like I was all, you know, just very faint and raspy. And now I feel especially boomy. So
you know what they say, Cole, if you want to know if your voice loves you, you got to let it go and see if it comes back to you again.
Maybe, yeah. Record. This is the fourth episode I've recorded today, and each of them has sounded very different.
Oh, gosh.
You are a chameleon, a vocal chameleon.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for your voice to go full ASMR.
I got a little bit of fry in there. It's probably fine. Although I can naturally do binaural stereo. It's by moving to the left of you, just talking while I walk in circles around you, but it's technically true.
Yeah, it's what listeners need to do for the podcast is just periodically remove one headphone and insert the other, and then this entire level experience can be binaural.
We mix it down to joint stereo, so it's mostly mono, except when there's stereo music. But, I mean, it could do something. I don't know. I don't know everything about audio.
I mean, if you've got mono, you should probably go see a doctor.
I mean, we've been mixing a mono for over a decade, so.
That's how it keeps spreading. God.
Oh, my gosh. David, how are things with you? We're at 0 hour for Dragon Con, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I am full speed ahead towards getting ready for Dragon Con. So
taking breaks only to let the sewing machine cool down.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if I said I think this was last weekend. You know, time is illusion. There's a belly dance workshop.
You have mentioned belly dance stuff before.
Well, what I think is last weekend, I hope. Like I said, it's kind of a time. Yeah, had a big workshop. It was, did basics of belly dance and then introduction to double veil.
Okay.
So yeah, it was good. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. Meet a lot of cool people.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Nice. So double veil, that's one in each hand? Is that what
exactly. So you start out, you know, basically both hands holding both of them so that, you know, it's like single veil, and then, you know, at a dramatic time, you know, drop one end of each and then you've got two of them.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
And the thing that surprised me is, you know, I work out a lot, I do martial arts, that sort of thing, but turns out waving around pieces of fabric is super, super tiring.
A lot of, holding your arms out
exactly.
for a long time is actually exerting. That's not a natural posture. There's like stabilizers that don't get fired under like normal lifts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I wouldn't be, it doesn't surprise me. That, and also, like the belly motion, like, the body doesn't naturally do that.
Yeah, that is probably the thing I'm having the most trouble with, is isolating the muscles. So, you know, there's things where, like, you have to move your upper abs and your lower abs separately.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely convinced I even have upper and lower abs.
Right.
Yeah. Just moving abs is hard enough for me. So.
Yes, exactly.
You guys have abs?
Yeah. One day.
Somewhere in there.
I gotta ask, are you papped up now, Cole?
Am I what?
Are you CPAPed up?
I am CPAPed up. I didn't know, but sounded like, I don't even know what I thought.
Yeah, that's
you
what
said.
The kids call it these days.
Yeah, all the kids who have sleep apnea. no, I am. So it was like last Friday morning, I called the medical supply company that was I had initially thought I was going to get the thing from. And they're like, we'll get the paperwork started. And, maybe we can have an appointment to set you up in about 3 to 4 weeks. And I was like, fuck that. And so I spent the entire morning calling around. And no, this was Thursday is what it was. Yeah, it was before I even recorded. It's like, all right, spent the morning calling around, found a place in Columbus that would serve me that day, with the caveat being, because our whole system is a joke, if I didn't use insurance. Even though insurance, because of my deductible, would not contribute a single red cent to this.
Oh my god.
And I've
Kafka.
Insurance would not, I still would have paid everything out of pocket, right? And I was like, well, fuck, I'm just gonna go and get this thing, because apparently here are the numbers that the sleep therapist like walked through with me. I don't know if this is like it's not part of my password or whatever, so like OPSEC is a thing. I was being interrupted in my sleep 68 times per hour. And I have reason to believe that it's been like that for more than a decade. So in the week since I have had this thing, I'm probably getting that number has gone down to like one and change, like 1.3, 1.4. So like, I'm not like super rested, because I've still got like sleep debt and, you know, there's a certain like acclimation period, but fuck, man.
Did you notice it like immediately, like night one?
Yeah, like I woke up the next day feeling like 10% better.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah,
I'm just imagining that your dreams were like what's that game, like Minute, where the world resets, you know, every 60 seconds.
MINIT. I don't know, I was still having dreams, but yeah, I thought it would be hard to get used to sleeping on my back. Turns out, one of the reasons I slept on my stomach was so I could breathe. And apparently even that wasn't working very well. Oh. When you can breathe, you can sleep on your back when your body isn't trained to think it's going to die. Mm-hmm. So I'm a believer.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. And that's really the only news I have, other than a bunch of boring yard work and doing stuff for my patio. So
well, yeah. At least you're awake to do all those things now, so that's good.
Yes. What's going on in the background?
The chainsaw killer is after one of us.
Yeah, right. Maybe.
Yeah, I tried to do a thematic for a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I had a window open in my back, so I am going to mute and go shut that window.
Okie doke. Yeah.
Wait, that does explain anything. When someone's like, why are you trying? Why are you getting murdered by a chainsaw? And you're like, oh no, the window's
open. That's
just
Seattle. Don't worry about nothing. It. It's normal. Yeah. Local chainsaw man.
Yeah. Local chainsaw man's an onion headline.
Fox News' representation of Seattle is accurate then.
Yeah. New season starting up, Local Chainsaw Man. Dennis, since Ben's away.
It's really sad that we'll never hear from Ben again, guys.
I really liked him.
I probably should have said something more meaningful.
He was a nice, other than questioning his nonchalance toward his own sectioning.
Send your applications for the level co-host to I've had a really fun week. I'm gonna sneak in some board game banter.
Okay.
Started playing a game called Sleeping Gods with the whole family.
Oh, so, hell yeah.
All right, yeah. So this is by the same people who made there's Above and Below was the first one, then there was Near and Far, and then there was like Then and Now. It's all these like very story-driven strategy games. So, you know, in the previous games, the ones that I just mentioned, you're kind of, there's like, you know, engine building that you're doing, or you're sending people on quests to get resources. But anytime you send someone on a quest, you open to like a specified place in this giant manual of stories, and you like read a given story. And then, you know, based on that, you're offered choices. Based on your choices, you get different rewards. There's skill checks involved. And it's this great way to have a whole bunch of story injected into an otherwise GM-less experience. And Sleeping Gods is that turned into an entire campaign. And it is cool as hell. So you are the crew of a ship that is trying to make the journey across the Atlantic back to the States. And you get waylaid by a storm and kind of come out of it in this nether realm. You don't know where you are, but there's someone, you know, you're kind of, it feels like pocket dimension-y, you know? And basically this is where the gods are asleep. And you know, there's all sorts of people here, trying to wake them, trying to keep them asleep, whatever. Your best bet to get out and back on with your life is to wake the gods. And so you set on this epic quest to do that. And you know, there are 9 crew members. So with 4 players, Barrett is not old enough to play, but me, my wife, Jen, and then our 2 older kids, Luke and Milo, are all playing together. You know, each of us gets 2 characters, and then the final character is Captain Odessa, and she is available to anyone to use. And basically every person on their turn gets to take a couple actions to generate resources, and then can move around this giant map. And you know, depending on how well you roll, or in this case draw cards, you can travel further, or you know, you don't get as far, but every section of the map has things to interact with, and when you choose to interact with those things, you again open this gigantic manual. It tells a story, and you know, those could be just little one-offs, like, oh hey, you find a field of grain, take 1 grain. Or it could be this incredibly involved quest where you're like riddling with a witch, and then that leads into a battle against some hill giants, and then that leads into finding a rune that helps you, you know, and you never know what you're going to get. So it's a really cool experience. The moment to moment is never so intense that our younger ones can't keep up. But the intrigue and kind of the ongoing story is really fascinating for both the kids and the adults alike.
How that was basically just the grind segment. I'm normally cranky about I'm normally like fake cranky about that, but yeah, that probably should have gone in the grind.
Got it. No, so that's, we've been playing that like as many nights a week as we can since we opened it.
Nice. I mean, so like I'm most interested in the kids side of this, you know, because like it seems like, you know, you say they can keep up, and I don't believe you because kids are really no. In terms of like how many like guardrails do you put on the decision making, or is like ultimate success for the group less important than like, I don't know, having a just a space where they can work out the decisions themselves.
So the really cool thing is that the structure of the game is that like after a certain period of time, the world kind of resets. And so it's meant to be played in waves where like your first time in, you're just kind of derping around, and then everything resets. And then your second time through, you still remember everything that happened and have a bunch of things that you unlocked. And so you can know, oh, that, you know, that secret island that it took us, you know, 3 sessions to find last time, we can go straight there. And so knowing it's meant to be cyclical like that, right now we are very hands off, and it's just like, yeah, you want to go where? Yeah, sure, why not? So you know, we investigated an area that was shrouded in fog just because it looked cool, and their guess was like, oh, I bet this is where the monster that's on the front of the box is. And they are so sure that this like giant sea monster that's on the front of the box, that it's going to show up at any second. And so that's fun. When we've gone to market shopping, it has been exclusively to buy cool weapons. You know, other provisions be damned. And so, you know, basically we have 2 characters that are fucking walking tanks. And then everyone else is kind of just making do with whatever we can scrounge.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So there's not a lot of you know, balancing between the crewmates when it comes to combat. The nice thing is that so many of the characters are good at different things. So skill checks that are non-combat, or you know, sailing, like I had mentioned, or all these different things that you know, just outputting damage is not the sole important thing. And so the game is kind of forgiving of having them focus on that, and we can focus on other things. But yeah, that's been a blast, and I haven't felt like they've derailed much, mostly because no one in the party knows what we're doing yet. And so it's just fun to explore.
Nice.
I have a question about this, because there's like a deck you go through of events every time somebody takes a turn.
Yes.
How far have you gotten through that?
We are partway. So when you create that deck, you pull from a much larger pool of cards.
Yeah.
But it's basically you'll have some easy, some medium, and some difficult.
Yeah.
And we are a good part of the way through the medium events on our first time through the deck.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The running gag has been fish. Or more specifically, meat from fish. Mm-hmm. Just the way random events have happened, we've wound up like having every meat token in the game. so we were all just cracking up around the table, like, okay, so I'm going to go here, and oh, of course, it's more fish. That's great. So that's become the running joke.
Cool.
So yes, I thank you for allowing me to firmly violate our banter rules.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Just really wanted to walk all over him for a bit.
Okay, Dennis. Dennis. Okay. All right.
Just walks in and takes a dump on the podcast.
Well, I'm happy that you and the family are having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? And have you tried that shit on me?
Well, I mean, I did play a game this week, but. I'm not going to talk about it now.
I'm pressure out of it.
No, I want to talk about, I've been following the FIDE World Cup of chess this past week. It's been going on for like the past month or so, but it's in the finals right now. So that's exciting. It'll be resolved by the time this episode comes out. So there's not as much like climax there, but what's cool about it is, today was the first day of the final match, and it's between Magnus Carlsen, the person who's been like the best chess player in the last like 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who is against him is a 18-year-old. He just turned 18. He's from India. His name's Pragnanandra, I think, but everyone calls him Prag.
Okay.
He set the record for being the youngest person in the finals for the world, for the chess World Cup. And they drew today, so it was just crazy to see the transition of kind of like the world's best player to this person might be the next world's best player.
How common are draws?
It depends. It usually shows that people are playing at about the same level. Typically, when you're at that level, people try and play for win, because like I can draw a lot, you just trade pieces all the time, and then like it gets to a boring game, and it's usually not a big deal because people aren't like these end game experts that can like take a win from nothing. But but at this level of like the world chess the chess World Cup, people play for win, so they don't make trades like the same way that like a more novice chess player would.
Interesting.
So they do genuinely go for trying like winning positions. But eventually it gets to a point where they're forced to trade pieces because otherwise they will like lose the game. But it is an indication that people are playing like pretty much at the same level. So what happens is tomorrow they'll play again. And if either person wins, then I think they win for good. And then if they tie again, the next day is like a blitz game where they just play games, quicker games back and forth until somebody wins. And then that's it.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really exciting to watch if you're into chess. What's nice about it is like they both of them really respect one another. Like earlier in the tournament, like maybe halfway through, when Prague won his game against someone else, Magnus got up from his chess game and went over and like congratulated him on it and stuff, and said like kind things to him, like, "Hey, we're all trying to play like you in this tournament." Yeah, it's nice that it's like friendly. They don't look mean spirited to one another. One thing that's nice is like after any game, they'll talk about the chess game and like what they could have done and stuff like that. And like that's always like good to see that it's not like a poor sportsmanship or anything like that. You don't see any.
And
of
is that just specifically those two, or like the entire field has been chill?
It depends on the player matchup for sure. But in this case, you can tell that they're talking about it because they both like respect one another. And literally, like these are like some of the fewest people who understand what the other person's thinking. So it's like. So I think they're more willing to talk with one another because these are like the only people they can talk to and like be themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, fun to watch. I'm excited to watch it tomorrow. It's in Azerbaijan. So like when I wake up, it is finished streaming like 2 hours ago. So, but I still try and not spoil myself of the results. So anyway, yeah, that's a fun thing going on right now.
So you have a little bit more insight into this world of pro chess and, you know, high level competitive play. Like what's your sense? What's your sense on FIDE like coming out and saying that trans women cannot play in the women's division?
Did they do that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
I mean, had not heard
it's well
that.
Known that trans women have psychic powers that could give them an unfair advantage.
Fellas, is it feminist and in the best interest of people with vaginas to say that people with penises have an intelligence advantage?
that does touch on like a weird thing of chess where, like, so with this going on right now, there is like a separate like women's World Cup that's going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's not dissimilar from like basketball or something like that, where it's this weirdly tiered system based on gender, even though there's not really a great reason.
It seems kind of silly.
Yeah. And it seems similar to like math and science type stuff where it's like, if you look early on at any of like any kid, regardless of any gender they identify as, like people all perform the same, but it's like over time, it's like, there's this like weeding out process where it's like, it's, you know, like where it feels like society's pushing out, you know, certain people.
The acculturation. I was just curious because that has popped up in a couple of podcasts I've listened to talking about it, but I just, you know, with your, you know, I just wanted to hear if you had a view on it. It's also fine if you hadn't heard about it because you're focused on the play of it.
Yeah, I follow more of the players than that. Like I've heard Magnus speak about it, and he says something that's like pretty similar to my feelings on it too, where it's like, obviously it's better, you know, the more representation you have in a sport, you know, like, and the more people that you can get into it, it's better for the sport in general. It's kind of antiquated in the sense that like, cause literally the titles are like women's GM is like a title in chess, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, well, that there's probably not a good reason for that anymore. I don't know when that was constructed.
Initially
it was
probably the only way women could get I won't say a seat at the table, but a seat at all was like, well, section is off. We'll play each other if you guys aren't going to pay attention. And then now we've got these weird relics where, like, you know, we don't want to take that away from someone, the women's GM, but also, like, yeah, we long term we want to be on the same playing field.
Yeah. And the nice thing about chess is it's just your brain, like it's just your brain talking on a board, and like it doesn't matter where you're from, and like independent of, you know, gender concerns, at least like it feels like a very inclusive community with respect to, like, you know, it's people from all different parts of the country, you know, all around the world and stuff like that. And it's like, the country you're from doesn't matter, you know, it's like what you can do on the board matters typically. So
yo, it's just your brain and sometimes anal beads.
that was an allegation. And I think it was a butt plug. Oh my god. Well,
remember we said we were going to keep this episode short?
We said short. We didn't say clean.
Yeah, it's always the kiss of death when we say, like, hey, let's make this a shorty. Well, in the interest, I mean, we've already talked about games. So why don't we do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss? And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, you said you played a game.
I just got two shorties to keep this short. The first one I got is Dave the Diver. Have people heard about this game?
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
I'm curious about it. New survival crafting kind of game, right?
Yeah. This is the first time I have heard that title, so you've got people across the spectrum here.
All right. I've only played a little bit of this, so I don't have, like, too much to say about it. But, I think what sold me for it, or what finally made me take the plunge, is someone was like, oh, this is, like, the next Stardew Valley. And I was, so my ears perked up at that. I'd seen a streamer play this like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, closer to when it was released. But basically this is the premise of this game is you get called in by a family member. It's like an uncle maybe or something, who is opening a sushi shop, and you play as somebody named Dave, who's just hanging out on a beach drinking root beer. And, he gets called in, to catch fish so that he can take them to a sushi restaurant so they can be prepared fresh and then given to customers. And basically what this turns into is kind of this two or three part game where you have like a day cycle similar to like Stardew Valley, but the things that you do are more planned, where during the base of the day, you're going diving. It's this kind of like huge expansive, like you don't know how deep it goes. It's not as, it's not three dimensional like Subnautica, but it's definitely, it's definitely like you can go deep and there's like gates and stuff to like how deep you can go and everything's upgradable. But the idea is you're diving to kill fish to, or to capture them, to bring them back so they can be served to people at dinner at night.
So say, if you want to specify that you're capturing, like we all know where they're winding up.
This yeah.
is happy yeah. in people's bellies. It's like little aquariums.
Yeah. So towards the top of, you know, it's similar to Subnautica where it's like rarer things deeper, like
yeah,
cute things at the top sort of thing. But they do gate it off also similar to Subnautica where it's just like, okay, well, your oxygen takes a plummet if you go too deep because like you don't have the right like tank for it or whatever. So you are kind of limited by your oxygen. There are like waypoints as you're diving where it's like you can go and call to the surface and it's like a fast travel up. So it kind of prevents you from the like the cave diver type thing of going too far and getting lost and dying. But you can also just swim to the surface wherever you're at if you can get there. And then from anywhere on the surface, you can go back to the boat. But what's cool about it is you just have this tiny mini game where you have a knife that you can kind of like prison shank in either side of you if you want. And then you have a harpoon gun that you can kind of aim at like a radial axis and then shoot and try and reel in a fish. And reeling in just means pounding on the space bar as fast as you can and hoping that it sticks. But you can do that. And then basically what you catch is goes to the restaurant. And what's interesting about it, or the follow through of it, is you make the menu every night based on the ingredients that you've caught in the dive.
That's
so like cool. If you catch a bunch of jellyfish, then you might make some weird jellyfish sushi, which I don't think you can do.
I think jellyfish will kill you if you eat them. And they're mostly just like loogies that move.
All right, bad example of that. Okay.
It's not so much they're poisonous. If you eat one of them, the others will actually just kill you in your sleep.
Ben,
do you know any other kinds of fish? Because literally any other kind of fish would have been a better example.
I know types of sushi, so I know that.
And you went with jellyfish.
Look, man.
Look, tell me a fish now or get out.
Penguin. Get me off the stand. Yes, I'll take penguin from look, the fish look weird, okay? They're weird and cartoony. I can't identify them. I know what tuna is. I know what salmon is. Anyway.
You've opened a Google page. You stopped long enough to open a Google page.
That's right. Anyway, so when you get back to the restaurant at night, you create a menu, and then it goes into this weird mini game where there's a cook that you work with at the restaurant who will like chop up and make food for people. But then you're the person like running the restaurant because somehow you get roped into doing this. And so you're basically running back and forth, delivering sushi to people. If you ever like pick up a plate and like you don't serve it to them on time, there's a button to just like get rid of it because there's high standards at this restaurant.
Okay.
You never serve a plate twice. And so and then people want like green tea and stuff. So you might serve that to them when they first sit down. And that's like another mini game that's there. It feels very similar to, there's a game that was blowing up a month or two ago. It's like Mr. Freeze's something. Do you guys know what I'm talking about with that?
No.
I'm going to have to search this up. Papa Freezia Deluxe.
Okay.
This is like, I don't know if it was a meme game or if it was just popular with like a set
about
of people.
Papa Freezia Deluxe on this motherfucker.
But yeah, that was like a weird mini game where you're making smoothies for people. But anyway, there's echoes of that in Dave the Diver at the restaurant portion.
And then that loop probably gets you funding to get new equipment to
repair the restaurant, improve all the different things that are going on. Yeah. And then on top of that, they try and make like narrative things going on. So like the first quote unquote, like, I guess like area of interest that you have in your dives is there's some sort of tentacle monster that is that like is taking a boat underwater. And so you have to dive and figure out what that is and explore that mystery. So yeah, there's some like decent hooks there. The animation is super, super charming. I cannot overstate that. It's all like 2D, but it is all stylized really, really well. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the studio that made this, or I haven't like deep dove on them or anything. But yeah, it's, I think the games that they made up until this point have been like kind of more like pretty small games. Not that they're like, I don't know if they're good or bad or not, but like small, like racing games, for example, or something like that. Kind of akin to what like No Man's Sky did before they did No Man's Sky. So yeah, that's Dave the Diver. The other selling point is like another reason why I was really curious about this is it has like really strong reviews on Steam. So that's part of what piqued my curiosity, is to see like if that feeling was there for me. So
yeah, I mean, there was like a little while ago where I think 80% of my Steam friends list was playing this.
Okay.
And that's what got my interest. I mean, yeah. would you say that like the positive reception of others has kind of rung true for you?
I mean, again, like I've only played a little bit of this, so I'm not like too deep into it yet. So I'm still getting my feet wet.
Yeah.
I haven't even dove in yet. You know what I mean? I'm still like snorkel level right now.
Stop. Just stop. No, continue.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'll probably come back like next week with a more informed opinion of whether or not this is like a you should buy it for X dollars or whatever.
Yeah,
But yeah,
I see you're serving drinks too.
Yeah. So yeah. I think it's so far it's just tea, but yeah, that might get more complicated later on. Yeah. You have to make wasabi too if that runs out. And so you have to like go through like the grating wasabi or whatever on a board. Anyway, yeah, it's interesting. All right, that's all I got to say about that. I'm going to move on to the next one.
Okay.
And so the next one isn't one I've played, but one I've watched, which feels like a cheat because it is. But I do want to talk about it, which is teased from all the chainsaw death outside, but the Texas Chainsaw Massacre game came out this past Friday. Have y'all seen this at all?
I streamed it.
Oh, well, nice. Let's talk about it. Let's segue to you then.
Yeah, we can both kind of like tag team it. That was going to be the first one I talked about anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't intend, if I knew that it was going to be a multiplayer game, I probably would have arranged with at least you, Ben. I don't know what you were doing on Friday. But yeah, Jolly came in and was like, wait a minute, you're playing something multiplayer? You didn't tell us? honestly, so here's, and I said this on stream, but like, I knew there was a Texas Chainsaw Massacre game coming out. I read something somewhere that led me to believe that it was going to be a turn-based, like, strategy kind of thing.
Like XCOM or
something?
That
would be awesome.
Yeah, where you were, like, you know, trying to escape and fight back in these different scenarios. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounded really cool to me. So I fired it, you know, I saw it was on Game Pass. So I downloaded it and I was like, hey, I'm going to start to stream this. That sounds really cool. And then when I loaded it up and I saw, like, join lobby, and then looked at the tutorial, I was like, oh, this looks like Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until then that I realized that it was a whole thing. So I only played it with pubbies, with other folks. So I don't know that I got like the best impression of it, and it's neat, but also this isn't the kind of game that I like go super crazy for. People in the chat were comparing it to like Dead by Daylight, which is just a game that I haven't played before.
Give
your description of what's going on here, Ben.
Yeah, so this is made by the same people who made Friday the 13th.
Is it now? Okay.
I believe so, yeah. I'm almost sure. Maybe someone can fact check me on that. But yeah, so, and it's similar kind of in design to Friday the 13th, where it's like they're taking an IP that has made a lot of different films, they're trying to build a game around it, they're trying to kind of like be true to the series and kind of reference like a lot of the lore within the worlds that were set up through the movies. The main difference, though, at least from what I've seen, is like Friday the 13th was very creative in its execution, and had a very good sense of immersion of like being at a campground, Whereas this one looks like Dead by Daylight just during the daytime. And it looks like the main source of inspiration was like the scene of the person running to the street with the chainsaw guy chasing her and like trying to play that up, I guess, like a little bit in the gameplay.
But it
could be, I just don't know I've seen the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I haven't seen any of the other ones. So it could be there's a lot of things just going over my head when I watch it get played.
You're right. It is like all building up toward that moment where it's just the barest escape, right? It is not the same team that did Friday the 13th.
Oh, dang.
This is actually some people who worked on it's Sumo Digital, like people who previously, it appears, worked on a bunch of like Little Big Planet stuff.
Oh, okay.
Again, with very little else to compare this to, it is an asymmetric multiplayer game where it is the victims versus the family. The victims start out tied up in the basement of whatever map they are in, and they need to escape while dealing with the security and also trying to run from the family. All of whom, so it's four victims versus three family. Someone's always going to be Leatherface, and have the chainsaw. But everybody has their own like special abilities, I think like pulled a little bit from the, from the movies, like stuff that they did. And the family, they have free run of everything. They can more readily attack people. They can like lock doors. But one thing that they are primarily trying to do is find the victims. And this is a stealth game, right? So the victims can hide and make themselves invisible as long as they are moving very quietly and sticking to the shadows and stuff. But the family can fight back against that and make the victims more visible and discoverable by finding blood and feeding it to grandpa.
That must happen later than the first movie. I don't remember that part of the first movie.
Grandpa's in the first one. I think he's only in the first one because I believe he dies in the first one, if I recall correctly.
Oh, he might. They might hammer him or something, but they never feed him blood in the first one for sure.
Yeah. But you've got to go around there like the blood containers that you've got to go to, and these are like, this is a source for early blood. But if you really want that blood, you have to find the victims and attack them. You know, you're probably not going to kill them unless they are in a compromised state, but you can attack them and then go back and feed grandpa, who has different levels of alertness. And what grandpa will do is the more alert that he gets, the more often he screams. And when he screams, anybody who is moving when that scream happens gets highlighted in the victims or in the family's HUD. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the family can, you know, seek these folks out, and the victims are trying to locate locks and like doing little mini games while they search through like toolboxes and stuff to try and not make a bunch of noise. And then like working to either sabotage the generator so they can get out, or, you know, find a special crank handle that will open up a tunnel. You know, like a sewer tunnel to get out, you know, various things like that. A bunch of things that as they search for it, and it is randomized each time where these things are going to be, as they search for it, they expose themselves to more and more risk. For the victim go ahead.
I was going to jump in and say one like key difference between this game and like Friday the 13th is like how the QuickTime event works is here. It's more of a bargain between how quick do you want it done and how much noise do you want to make, but it's up to you. Whereas like previous games, it's like, can you click the, you know, highlighted area in time or something like that?
Yeah.
And so I think this is a much better execution of it because it allows you to just be like, make the choice. Like, I need to get this done in a second. I don't care if they see me or not, because I need to get out of here.
Yeah. I have like a path to escape. Like I know where I can run to. I know where I can hide. Like the emphasis on stealth in this is actually really good, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that sort of bargains like in all the different elements, like when you're opening a door, searching for items, like doing any of the events to like leave the area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you know when somebody is coming because like there's a proximity effect, like when and also the family is like calling out. There's mm-hmm. there's a little bit of stealth on the family side as well. Like it takes a while and it takes a mini game for Leatherface to rev up the chainsaw, you know. Mm-hmm. But like Leatherface can just go stealth and turn the thing off and, you know, move around, and then you get this, you know, really fun moment where just you think that you're okay, and then all of a sudden. yeah this is not to say there isn't like a certain amount of jank to it, and not like charming jank. Like moving around is a little bit just feels awkward, triggering mm-hmm. certain things. Like combat is basically nothing, you know, like it's just kind of like slashing at each other. It just, it kind of doesn't seem to be about that. It could feel better, but it just doesn't seem to be about that. You can decide how much of an excuse that should be.
They have a lot of the same conceits as Dead by the Daylight, where there's areas that the victims can get through that the family cannot.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Small, like, crevices that they can squeeze through, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, or, like, barbed wire they can squeeze under. Yeah. And then they can also be temporary things, like Leatherface can, like, destroy those, and then then family can just run through. No problem.
Yeah, Leatherface can go through barriers. The hitchhiker is like wiry enough to squeeze through like smaller gaps. Mm-hmm. You know, the cook is able to like hear and listen. So like for a brief period of time, like get a heightened sense of people moving nearby, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And the victims have their own powers too, like small bursts of, you know, like, or substantial bursts of stamina when they're running. Like, you know, this is somebody who does not have to do the lock picking mini game, can just like, as long as they have the lock pick, they just force it, you know. Stuff like that.
And I believe the perks are, it's like you build like your character too, where it's like you unlock different perks and you can choose like what combination you want for characters.
Yeah, you can choose kind of a loadout. You know?
I don't know how I feel about that being kind of the norm for many games, because it feels like
it doesn't need to be the case. I don't like it.
Yeah, if I want to jump into a game like this, I need to play 70 hours of the game until I have enough loadout stuff unlocked to really play the game.
God, Left 4 Dead had the right idea.
Mm-hmm. where it's computer or no wait like are you talking about with the players as monsters and survivors?
No, I mean just like there's no RPG like progression element. Everybody goes in, yeah, and it's your knowledge of the maps and the system that
I would counteract that it's just a game that scales with people's knowledge of the game. So it's like I agree that if there's no like matchmaking or whatever and you just are playing random people who are like OP, then yeah, that sucks. Mm. But like just play with friends or something like that.
Bold of you to assume I have friends.
Play
with your family. You're playing with Sleeping Gods. All right, kids, time to fire up.
Yeah.
Barrett can play this time.
Who wants to be scarred for life? Yeah, like I thought it was neat. I'm glad I didn't drop money on it.
I think it's $40 maybe for it. But
yeah, it's $40, which is fine. Like this is a B-level product, you know. Yeah. And it's multiplayer, so like if it gets its hooks in you, you're going to get a lot of like value out of it. A thing that I ran into that was a bit of a problem, I don't know if this comes across when you're watching streams, as a player, it's way more fun to be the victim.
Yeah.
I just like, it's like higher drama. Your round is quicker if you're just playing with puppies, you know, and just doing, you know, and doing matchmaking. Like if you're going to fuck up, you're going to fuck up. Like you the family all moves very slow, slower than the victims do, which is, you know, you want to get those moments of pursuit, right? And like the powers and just situations that you get into seem more interesting, you know, and you're not spending time trying to wake up grandpa with blood, right? Which is a little bit tedious. And there's like a little bit of like a capture the flag thing where you want to generally have somebody close to grandpa to protect him, because he can be taken out of commission if one of the survivors gets up and does an attack with the right item. Yeah, that's the other thing. I was playing it with puppies. Is that what the kids call it when you just play with random matchmatching people? Is that still the thing we used to call it?
I was going to say yes, so I don't have to learn new things.
Randos. I was playing with randos, and like, I could see where you would benefit from a little bit more coordination, but also like, not really. It didn't seem like teamwork was a huge factor. I didn't see the place where it would slot in, right? So that is a little bit more, especially on the victim side. So no clue. Like, there could be moments where, like, I don't know, a person creates a distraction so the other person can escape, because it only takes one victim to escape for the victim team to win. You know, you know, that is kind of a decision that only has weight once.
Yeah, you
know? Just like, oh yeah, that's like the move it has, and then otherwise we're just all kind of trying to find our own way and open our doors and such.
And just like the general vibe of this compared to Friday the 13th, like, it seems the gameplay of it that comes out is like, it feels very similar to Dead by Daylight, where there's a lot of just like running through cracks in the walls and then crouching and looking and watching them go the wrong way or something like that.
Yeah,
but it kind of takes the air out of, like, Leatherface kind of looks like a doofus then, and doesn't look as like,
Leatherface always looks like a doofus.
Well, all right. But it's like, whereas like in Friday the 13th, you're like, if Jason finds you in a cabin, you're like, well, I'm probably dead, so I'm gonna just try and distract him for as long as possible to try and give time to other campers. Yeah. But it's like, it's a much more consequential experience than what it seems to be in this one. But,
yeah. I thought it was neat. I don't know that I'm going to play it anymore. Just because I don't do multiplayer. Like, if it makes sense to do, for a stream, charity stream or whatever, like, that's, we can revisit it then. But like, I don't know, the version of it that I built up in my own head before I realized what it actually was way cooler.
Oh no.
I have no idea where I got the sense that it was going to be like that. Any other things about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, questions, things like that?
I think I've said my piece with it.
The other game that I played, this is another one I streamed because Texas Chainsaw Massacre was only one night. But it is a small Russian horror game. I have no idea. One of the options in the menu was Cyrillic. No clue. But it is a independent horror game, very small, I believe, one person project called Nine Child's Street.
Okay.
And this is, have I talked about Flashlight House on here?
No,
not that I remember.
Flashlight House, is the mono game that, a lot of, independent horror games revert to. You have seen this if you are looking around at horror games. I've played and streamed a ton of them, but you are walking around in a house with a flashlight. Sometimes things will jump.
That checks out.
Yes, you will walk around, you will look for something to interact with, and then a thing will happen. You'll get a little jump scare, maybe your flashlight will go out, but then the flashlight comes back on, and then you go and look for the next thing that you need to interact with. And it is mostly a bare interaction model in a familiar space that is a delivery vehicle for whatever scare the developer came up with. Oftentimes, it appears to be using like default Unity assets. It is many faces of the same game. That game is Flashlight House.
Fair enough.
Okay. Nine Child Street is like that. You're playing as a small child who is intensely curious about the creepy house across the street. And you go in to take a look, and it turns out that this is a place where children have been kidnapped and taken, and you are trapped here by the spirits of those kids, and you're looking for a way to escape and get out, and find a way to get away from the actual threat that has brought people in. And it's fine as far as Flashlight House goes. But there's a certain point where when you've played one of them, you have played all of them. And that's kind of the case here with me, which means that I'm probably not like the ideal person to, you know, kind of comment on this and criticize it, because this will work for somebody. I found this and played it because somebody in chat said, like, hey, this was actually pretty good, and I believe them that it was pretty good. It's just I kind of have seen a bunch of these tricks before.
You literally do this for a living, so
yes. So that I feel like did in a way that is probably a useful perspective to have, you know, to identify that Flashlight House exists and it could be waiting around any corner when you are looking around, when you are looking at Steam. like this one in particular, like, it's fine. It's, you know, $6 for about an hour and a half of, like, you know, pretty well rendered horror content with a couple of pretty good spooks, some of them being, you know, relatively cheap. One or two puzzles that show a little bit more inventiveness than you usually find in Flashlight House. But yeah, pretty standard. Am I wrong that, like, my reductive stance on this is unhelpful?
No. Like, you know, everyone's got to build their first horror game sometime.
Yes.
I think this for you is like indie puzzle games for me, where it's like,
yeah,
play them to exhaustion. You see the patterns that are common among them. And mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say when something doesn't kind of rise above the typical pattern, but that doesn't mean it's inherently bad. It just means that you've kind of seen it before. So
yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Just once you go looking for it, you see Flashlight House in a bunch of places and at like multiple different scales too, right? Like a game that I want to, a horror game that was very popular a few years back, Visage, is mm-hmm. a larger scale, you know, horror game. I did like an hour long, like, preview video of it back when it was in early access, I think, and it was scary, but it was still Flashlight House, just a more refined version of Flashlight House.
Is Layers of Fear Flashlight House?
Layers of Fear is like almost like a bare template for Flashlight House, insofar mm-hmm. as like there's no flashlight, there is a house, but it's, you know, you are walking around it and just kind of going where it leads you. It just has a little bit more panache because of the rearranging House of Leaves kind of stuff that it does. Okay. Right. But you are still following event flag after event flag to get where you need to go, which is a crucial element of Flashlight House, which is touch the thing that is interactable and then search around for the next thing that is interactable.
Mm-hmm. Just make sure you don't get the you know, hentai game Fleshlight House.
Oh no.
Gotta touch a lot of interactable things in that one.
yeah
oddly enough, it's actually about a fleshlight that becomes a famous DJ.
Oh, okay. No.
Yes.
I was gonna say,
very deep lore.
It's called Fleshlight House, but your flashlight is a black light. Jesus. So like, I don't know. Looking at the they've been cranking them out here recently. It seems like a very small studio that has put out like a handful of these, including one here
cranking
recently.
Them out is also what you do in Fleshlight.
You know, no shade.
When you look up their game history, is it just like 8 Child's House, 7 Child's House, 6 Child's House?
That's, you know, I could have just been lost because I didn't see the I didn't play the prequels. No, it's all stuff that is very similar. I see another. It's Flashlight Basement. Here is that's Flashlight Apartment Building. And then
I don't even know if we're doing a bit anymore.
No. And then there's Flashlight. Ooh, this is Flashlight Apartment Building, but it's in China. Okay.
All right.
Now. So, that's where I'm at. I don't know. Maybe
fair,
check it
fair
out.
Enough.
Maybe check it out.
M tier.
And
maybe
rated M for maybe. David, what you got?
Sorry. I was restricting, make a very, very dumb Chinese joke.
Okay.
But, anyways, I've been, So I want to actually have something new to play this time, you know, as opposed to, you know,
the Diablo 4 check-in.
Straight week of Diablo.
Mm-hmm. So Stanley Parable DLC or...
I refuse to believe that that exists.
There was that remastered edition with the new content. Mm-hmm. Continue.
I shake my head at you. No, I actually gave Fortnite a try.
Ooh.
I've been meaning to do that. I really have been meaning to do that. What's that like?
Wow, it is a lot. So it's actually, Dennis, I could see you enjoying this because it's probably one of the most PvE focused battle royale games I've seen, so far.
Did you play in no build mode?
No, I did not. I have, okay. I did try that once. So there's currently... I'm trying to, they have like daily challenges and I'm not sure if you can complete them in no build mode.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really have interest in going back to Fortnite. Like I've played it in various iterations in the past. But playing in no build mode could be one of the things that got me to try it again.
Yeah. I will say like so far I have not seen any application of building that isn't just straight up annoying.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's all just like people, you know how when a squid gets startled, it shoots out a cloud of ink?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Build mode is basically like that, except it's a brick wall.
Build a tower of babble, yeah.
Yeah, so just like you come up and start shooting at someone and then all of a sudden wall.
Hmm. You literally made them shit a brick.
Yes, exactly. No, but what's interesting about it, at least to me, is there's a heavy, heavy focus on, you know, different events going on and, you know, side missions, that sort of thing. And so I basically spend the entire match just dicking around, you know, trying to complete these random side missions, and then it's not until there's like five people left that I actually bother to start, you know, fighting people.
Okay.
Are those people inevitably like way more kitted out than you and you get raffle stomped, or like does a PvE focus actually carry you into end game?
So far I actually won my second game.
Hmm.
Follow-up like question: how many of them are bots?
I don't.
Yeah,
think
if, when
so.
when you start, like if you're fresh, your game will be populated a lot with a lot of bots.
Well, even I mean, I've got friends that play every night, like regularly with a group, and they know how to spot them.
Mm.
So they'll be like, "All right, that one's moving like a bot. We can close it." Or like, "Oh no, I just saw him do XYZ. Back off, he's real."
Yeah.
So. Like you eventually can very quickly know one way or another.
I don't know, and I used a power weapon to the last player's back, and that was one of like two kills I got that match.
Hmm.
Nice.
So they're currently doing a like Jujutsu Kaisen event, which popular action manga. And so you can basically get the ability to shoot like psychic exploding nails at people.
Okay.
And so I basically just ran up behind them and nailed them in the head.
Mm.
But, you know, that kind of actually gets to what I've enjoyed about this, which is just, and why I say it's a lot, which is, you know, it's pretty much just they haven't seen a crossover. They haven't liked.
Mm-hmm.
So you're definitely, you know, fighting characters from various anime. Darth Vader might show up. There's currently a Transformers event. So, like, the current map has a, you know, this big ruins in the center, and it does the whole, like, Transformers movie Ancient Aliens thing.
Hmm.
So it's just, honestly, it's hard for me to describe just how much just random mechanics are flying around at all times.
Yeah. I saw on stream a guy playing as Willy Loman from Death of a Salesman crashed a car into a guy.
And I don't even know if you're joking.
No, I was just thinking of like the weirdest crossover I could think of off the top of my head.
I mean, that would honestly not surprise me.
Wait, hold on. I'm browsing DLC and they have skins for the level co-hosts in here. What the hell?
We made a lot of money off of that deal.
We? He was on it?
We, huh? Weird.
You know. But yeah, and, you know, actually a surprising amount of depth. You can, you know, some, again, with the, you know, they never met a reference they didn't like, presumably, because, you know, someone really liked Predator, you can, do things to get your character covered in mud. And then, you know, unlock various advantages while covered in mud. You know, similarly, you can do, like, builds around, you know, getting advantages while you're swimming, all sorts of things. It's just, I don't know, it's one of those things, it's hard for me to explain it in any meaningful way because it's very much a game that revolves around maximalism. Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say it's very hard for me to explain it in any meaningful way because I don't understand what's happening.
Oh yeah, no, that's also true. I have very little understanding of what's happening. I think my favorite thing that exists right now is with the Jujutsu Kaisen event. You can get one of the character's psychic powers, which basically shoots this massive energy ball that, you know, flies like 30 feet and will just destroy any structure it hits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've had times in a fight where, like, you know, someone's you know, doing the whole, like, you know, camping out with a shotgun in a building. I'm just like, I'm tired of this now. There's now no more building. Just raise the entire thing in one blast.
Does it also raise the person, or do you just are now fighting because there's no building specifically?
I mean, it will kill someone and do a ton of damage, but it's actually pretty hard to hit someone, which I think I like because, you know, it would actually be a much more boring weapon if it was just like, hey, this is, you know, a super shot. It's much more interesting that's like, hey, here's this ability whose whole useful point is being able to do a ton of collateral damage.
Hmm.
It's like the Spartan laser in Halo.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, the other thing that's kind of cool, you know, a lot of different unlockable skins, stuff like that. As far as I can tell, you can even unlock variant soundtracks.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool.
Like related to the licenses?
I'm not sure yet, if it's that, or it looks like maybe it's there's different ones for like different seasons or something like that. I'm not certain yet.
I would not be surprised if, you know, for all the streamers on it, they had an onboard radio where streamers playing it don't have to worry about whether or not the stuff that they're playing is going to get copyright striked.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see that.
So I know you're learning belly dancing. Are you learning any of the Fortnite dancing now?
You know, that might have to be the next step. I think that is one of the underappreciated gifts that Fortnite has given to the world is like teaching all of the Zoomers how to dance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I swear. So I, you know, wherever I go to Walmart, there'll be people, people shopping with their kids. And I swear Fortnite has managed to implement, idle animations, just as far as I can tell, when any of the kids start idling too long, they just start doing a Fortnite dance.
Start flossing.
That seems right.
It's weird how durable the game has been.
Oh yeah.
I thought you were gonna say how durable the kids are.
Well, you know, kids bounce. Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like it's constantly reinventing itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I haven't dove into is apparently they've opened up and players can now create their own game variants. And it looks to me like, and like I said, I haven't messed with this at all, but from just looking through the options real quick, it looks like, you know, people have done just all sorts of off the wall stuff. And I think because this is made by Epic, I think you can actually just straight up use the Unreal Engine to do stuff in your custom game.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, because I don't know an awful lot about Roblox development, but not being tied to or attached to a, generally or broadly used engine does make that seem a little bit more like a specialized skill or less portable skill.
Yeah, let's say. Totally. Totally.
So if that is the case where they are surfacing Unreal Engine creation stuff in a way where people would be motivated to dig into it, that is a neat, I don't know, modern day analog of how modding was a way into video game development back in the late 90s, early 2000s,
Fortnite as a video game kind of seems like what WeChat is as an app, where it's just like you just stuff everything. Anything in there. Yeah.
It's also weirdly like the only successful iteration of the metaverse or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It is a profoundly strange product.
I'm still waiting for Zuck or some startup con man to look at that and be like, no, you see what the metaverse lacked? Guns.
Yeah, just had violence.
But I mean, that's the thing. For all the metaverse pontification and everything, it's just people who had never actually played WoW or Fortnite and realized that, oh, this already exists, this thing we're pitching.
It was all just money people looking for quick VC cash, everything is. But Well, it sounds like you plan to go back to it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be messing with it. At least, I could definitely see it being a thing where I, pop in when a new season drops or something like that.
Are you playing with folks or are you just playing with puppies and or randos?
Yep, just parandos.
Gotcha. Sounded like you were going to ask something, Ben.
No, I was just trying to think of a pun for PUBGs and puppies.
Cool. Was that all you had, David?
Yep, that's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, so I've been trying a couple of new games recently because I picked up a Steam Deck. And I can't remember if I mentioned this last week or not.
It was a listener who sent it to you, right?
That's right. Yeah. So thank you, Case. That's right. I did talk about that. I've been enjoying the hell out of that. And have tried a couple new games and come back to a couple old games because of it. The first thing I tried was Aperture Desk Job, which is the phenomenal kind of tutorial game for the Steam Deck, I guess. Free game put out by Valve. Set in the Portal universe, which is very apropos because Ben and I just guested on Jolichan's place for an episode about Portal. Man, what a what a fun way to extend that universe. And holy hell, I had no idea when I found out about the game that Nate Bergazzi plays your AI counterpart.
Nate Bergazzi. I don't know who that is.
He is a comedian that I absolutely adore. Watch all his specials. Jen and I went and saw him live when he was in Cincinnati. He is the way I say it is that his delivery style is 90% of the humor. Because he's just telling dumb stories and saying dumb shit. The way he expresses himself is you're watching the thought be assembled in his head real time.
Okay.
Like it doesn't feel like something that's rehearsed or planned. It feels like just he's rambling and then he'll suddenly like make a connection or change his train of thought in just really funny ways. Mm-hmm. It's one of the comedians, like one of the few comedians where I think their delivery style is like truly something unique. Anyway, he plays basically himself as a robot in Aperture Desk Job. Have people played this who have a Steam Deck here?
No, I haven't. Okay. No reason. I know that I feel stupid because there is Portal content that I have not seen. But yeah, I have not.
Okay. Got it. So as endearing as Wheatley is in Portal 2,
mm-hmm.
Nate as Grady is in this Aperture Desk Job game.
Mm-hmm.
The actual game part of it is extremely light and only serves as a vehicle for bits. Like, mm-hmm. you are an employee with Aperture, you start testing things, and then you kind of fall ass backwards into inventing something, which you then take up to show to Mr. Cave Johnson.
Did they get J.K. Simmons to do the voice again?
It is. Yes, it is the OG.
Nice.
So J.K. Simmons is the voice of Cave Johnson again.
What time period does this take place in?
Oh, man, that's part of the spoilers, so I'm not going to say.
All right.
Yeah, and as someone who's played Portal 2, it's like, okay, yeah, figuring out the when of this is kind of some of the interesting game on the side of the game that's happening. Yeah,
because the key art looks very 70s-y.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Suffice to say, you are going up and down floors in the facility.
Okay.
Yeah, you use your inventions to shoot things a little bit, but mostly you just listen to Grady prattle on, and say hilarious things, and it is quite enjoyable.
Nice.
How long of a playtime is it?
Oh, it's a half hour. Very, very short game here.
What functions of the Steam Deck is it like introducing you to?
You know, I was surprised by how limited it was. Because the idea seems to be you would expect this to kind of go through everything the Steam Deck can do. Primarily, the like showcase is when your invention first comes up on screen. I'm not going to say what it is, but literally every button on the Steam Deck does something on the invention.
Okay.
And so you're just watching this, unfold, and like literally every button you push does something funny and interesting. And then they scale it down to basically shooter controls.
Okay.
And you're, you know, you can use the gyroscope or you can use the right stick, but it's just shooter controls, mm-hmm. Which again, odd choice to me, that they would do that. It's very restrained, and on the Portal episode, of Jolichan's place, I talked about one of the things that really stuck with me from Portal was the amount of restraint. Just they didn't linger on any mechanic or idea too long. They were always getting to the best 10% of you know, whatever mechanic, and then they were on to the next one. And it feels very much like they're doing that in Aperture Desk Job with the Steam Deck's functionality.
Mm-hmm.
But you will learn how to take a screenshot as part of it, and you will learn that the thing has a microphone, so I assume I am always being recorded.
Oh, now. Yeah, yeah.
But if anyone has a Steam Deck, it is the perfect onboarding to it, and if anyone likes Portal, man, it is exactly what you want out of an extension of the Portal universe.
Nice. I mean, this seems like an opportune moment to talk about it. Like, what's your impression of the Steam Deck other than, wow, this thing is way too big?
It's actually, I have not minded its size. But, you know, I'm mostly playing like on my couch or in my hammock or in my bed. Mm-hmm. You know, I am not, I'm not playing it somewhere like an airplane seat or something like that where space is really a concern. So yeah. I haven't thought about it in terms of that. It is a great machine. I was able to install mods and, you know, variants of different games. So it's doing everything that I want it to do. I will say that the battery life is surprisingly bad to me.
Yeah. And it depends on the game too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And, you know, some of it is to be expected given that this is a high powered machine running high powered games. Like, God, you can literally install Elden Ring as a verified game on this Steam.
Yeah. Game, yeah.
Which I have not done yet, but like I could, if I wanted to. But yeah, so I'm kind of keeping it hooked up to a charger anytime it's not in use.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that gets me reasonably well through an evening of gaming. But it definitely is like, you know, if I'm playing, towards the end of the night, I'll get the little notification that I'm almost out and I have to go, sit near an outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's everything I wanted it to be. And as long as I'm not trying to take it on a weekend for a single charge, I'm happy.
Yeah. Cool.
This actually answers like a question that I had where it's like I've been thinking about building a new PC, but it's like if I just need something to play games on computer, this does sound like a good option. And no, we are not sponsored by Steam Decks. But
No. We're sponsored by everything we say, anything positive about. I want everybody to be perfectly crystal clear about that.
So all that Fleshlight talk earlier.
use our coupon code.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You can win a level Flesh House.
I mean, so like, I don't know if it would be a full-on computer replacement. Possibly, but like there is definitely like a it just depends on the kind of stuff you would want to play, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have had a good experience with installing mods, and so far I've
go ahead and move on to your next thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, so I've been playing Slay the Spire again with more time with the Downfall mod. And that actually, I didn't even have to do anything, but because it was in my library as a mod I had downloaded with the game, it just downloaded it alongside.
Oh, wow.
And I never, you know, never had to blink an eye. It was just there and worked. I had to do a little bit more gymnastics to get the Blizzard launcher running on Steam. On the deck, because it's, you know, it's basically a Linux machine, and you know, that's not really a mod, that's just kind of a separate launcher.
It's a just different interface. You go into desktop for that.
So I went into the desktop mode for it, but I actually went all the way through and got it set up so I could launch it from my, it's not big picture mode because it's a small screen, but you know, that from the Steam Deck interface instead of going out to the desktop interface. But I definitely learned how to use the desktop interface through that. and it's easy. It's just like using a computer.
We should say that you have a history of portable devices working supernaturally well for you.
I've got the magic. What can I say? And then I also installed XCOM 2, and I haven't gone in to play it yet.
Of course you did.
Yeah, look, of course I did. That one is not technically verified, but from what I've read, the mods work surprisingly well on that as well. So it's, you know, good for mods, very seamless experience. But I would agree with you, Cole, that this is not going to replace the thing that I especially want to play multiplayer games on.
Yeah, just the performance ceiling is not... It's a very impressive machine, but like from trying to play more intricate things on it, like the ceiling is lower than I would like it to be. But like, that's fine because the things that I want to play portably are either slower things or kind of more modest stuff. Like, I know that you can run Baldur's Gate 3 in it. I don't know that I would want to, especially with the screen size and the resolution, you know, for text legibility kind of reasons. Yeah. Right.
I mean, you can run Doom on a pregnancy test, but that's not because it's a desirable system to run it on.
You can display Doom on a pregnancy test. You can't run it. I know who you're talking about.
Okay. Well, clearly you have not stayed up to date on the technical capabilities of pregnancy tests.
Okay.
Since that article.
Congratulations, honey. It's going to be a demon.
Is it always?
Playing Downfall is excellent. I actually finally put enough time into it to unlock the final character that I hadn't unlocked yet, which is the Collector, one of the bosses that you run into in the main game. And that's kind of the theme of Downfall, is it's all these boss monsters or notable monsters from the game that you're coming back around and playing as. They've got these like crazy extra systems tacked on for each of the characters. And the Collectors is actually an entire second deck that you play from. And so the deck starts empty and you can add cards to it at the end of battles, collecting whatever monsters you battled against. And each monster is represented as a card that is like thematic with what they do.
Okay.
You have to manage a whole nother resource track to do that. So you get little varying amounts of resources as you complete different difficulties of battles. There are some events that will up that resource, or there are even some cards that will up that resource. But so you're kind of playing this second deck building game within the deck building game, as the Collector. They also have a keyword called Pyre, which basically you have to exhaust another card as a cost for playing the card with Pyre. That's nothing new. There are plenty of cards in the main game even that, you know, exhaust other cards. But this is the first time it's represented as a mechanic. Or, you know, a discrete keyworded mechanic. And, you know, there's a bunch of cards that play with that. So with some cards, when they're exhausted, give you certain things. Some cards will scale, or if they come back from being exhausted, they'll do different things, and the Collector plays with that. And then the final kind of branch of mechanics for the Collector is an additional pool of resource that is persistent turn over turn. So, you know, you can get a relic that has you keeping your energy or whatever you call it, turn over turn. With the Collector, you have that from the get-go, but it's only for this second kind of energy to play cards with.
Okay.
And so, yeah, there's kind of three levels going on of a side resource for the Collector. The separate deck, the separate resource for buying cards for that deck, and then the separate resource for playing cards. And that forms a very interesting challenge. Also a very complex one. So
it sounds really ambitious as far as a mod goes. I mean, to kind of build a whole side deck onto it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, every single character in Downfall, there are eight of them total, has that level of complexity, like basically three different systems or ideas that they present. And that's in line with the main game, where like you want to be able to play each character different ways. So they've done an amazing job. And yeah, as I've done reading and you know, just been thinking about it, as I've played Downfall, the consensus is like, yeah, this is the sequel to Slay the Spire.
Oh,
it doesn't need an expansion. It doesn't need a sequel. We have it. It's Downfall.
Huh. This reminds me of like Portal Reloaded, where it's like, if you get something that enough people like, they will build more of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very lovingly.
I mean, that people want to build it is not a surprise to me. That it is sanctioned enough to have a Steam store entry, and the developer of Slay the Spire has not taken action on it, is the remarkable thing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good on them.
Yeah.
And then the final thing I've been playing, technically new, but I did not play very much, so I'll just kind of include it at the end here, is Atomic Heart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You should not sound so excited.
I just know it as the game that the internet is bizarrely horny for.
Yeah, because it's trying to make you bizarrely horny because of the androids, the android nurse ladies or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's that. There's the, your like vending machine is horny.
Yeah.
But I'm getting ahead of myself.
Did it first.
Dennis, surely if we back up, the horny vending machine will make sense if you walk us there. Spoiler alert, it won't. But this game is basically BioShock, but set in Soviet Russia. And I vaguely remember...
Which ironically is the exact opposite of BioShock.
Yeah. Or at least BioShock 1.
Yeah, of BioShock 1. And it cribs a lot of the vibe from those games, like especially because the city you start in is kind of a utopia, a la BioShock 3, or excuse me, BioShock Infinite, I guess.
Utopia for whom though?
Utopian on the surface, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like old school USSR, but they've made advances in robo technology that, you know, have all these androids that are kind of functionally conscious and all this stuff. And you are, well, I don't even know who you are. You kind of just start walking and someone tells you to go places and you do. But I guess
so they're really leaning into the BioShock thing.
Yeah. Right. The primary characteristic of your main character is that they are an edgelord.
I mean, the dialogue that I have seen, you know, just excerpted, you know, people posting videos mm-hmm. of it seems poisonous.
Absolutely horrendous. And not just because it's poorly written, but there's a bunch of like, wait, did I download an alt-right game stuff in there?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, isn't this the game that maybe got funding from Russia or whatever?
Well, and that's, I haven't looked back into it. When I saw it and downloaded it, I vaguely remembered like, oh, this was made by Russian devs or got, yeah, there was something about that. And I was like, that won't be too much of a factor in it.
There was a controversy with some assets that they explained. And okay. I'm putting a little bit of suspicion on explains.
I was going to say, I hope they were under Russian influence because they have no reason for being this bad if they weren't.
I just, I mean, there are very good Russian game devs.
Russian state influence on the game. Not
yeah,
because they are
yeah.
Russian.
And, you know, just, or just these are, and like the money thing too. I'm not apologizing for this because it does seem like it's a, I want to avoid anything that's just like, outright like xenophobic against it. Not that I'm accusing anybody of doing it, but that's like that is an easy posture to kind of like fall into. The thing with the money was like it's kind of like how China gets to funding a bunch of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it's most like with this, you know, it's like a wealth fund like that is ostensibly a private company, but sovereign wealth gets kind of pushed into it.
We'll do the Karate Kid remake. We'll even get you Will Smith and Jackie Chan. It's just going to be a love letter to Chinese culture.
I, as far as I know, there is no like outright evidence of there being a there being like content say about mm-hmm. like, you know, about what is depicted in there, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically with its it gets into stuff that I don't know about modern day Russia's let's say relationship with the USSR, you know, mm-hmm. history and era and like I idealizing that, but also here it's shown as a dystopia, you know, where the promise of it isn't fulfilled, et cetera. Like, it's just a bunch of stuff that I don't have a lot of insight into.
Sure.
Yeah. So like it could, you know, the studio being full of shitheads does not necessarily have to do with any kind of state actor kind of thing. It can just be really regressive folks who happen to be in this position to make this game.
Again, you know, having played essentially like the tutorial, there's so much stuff in there that just makes you raise your eyebrows, that your eyebrows are so high on your head at the end of it. You're like, okay, this is adding up to something that I don't necessarily want to continue with.
Is it plausible enough with this misogyny that they could say, oh, we're actually making a statement that this is bad?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're in the first half hour of the game, so you could be setting this up, but it is not stuff that feels thoughtful. It feels like stuff that is seeping through in a thoughtless way.
Give an example.
So, yeah, the main example that sticks out in my mind is you're in another kind of cutscene conversation, which 90% of the tutorial is either cutscenes or you can look around, but you can't do anything. And so effectively a cutscene. And someone like buzzes into your earpiece to tell you where to go next or what to do next. In a way that did not register to me as overly pushy, but the main character responds with "Jawohl, mein Führer," and the guy's like, "What? What?" You know, and then another person chimes in after the conversation, was like, "That was maybe a little intense," and your character's response is, "I don't care."
Yeah. Okay.
and the reaction from your buddy who kind of questioned you was, "I thought you'd say something like that." Like, that's so you. Okay. That's so Raven. And it's like, I don't, what? Like, I don't understand why, what just happened. Like, yeah. what, I don't know. It just, like, that struck me weird. When you get to the vending machine, okay, hey, we're at the horny vending machine. Now it's going to make sense because it's just a weird game like that. So this vending machine is female voiced and incredibly aggressively horny towards you, to the extent that you think you're being attacked by it initially.
Okay.
And it's got a bunch of like tentacle monster arms that grab you and pull you up in the air. And then there's this whole bit made where she's basically begging you to fuck her while you fight her robot arms, but also like jam one of them into something else to make her submit. It's like, it's very fraught. All to get access to an upgrade system. Like, why did we just do that?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Why was that the framing device for that?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and someone in the Discord, or excuse me, in the Slack, pointed out that apparently the DLC is like, has that character, the horny vending machine, front and center.
Well, so why not? Yeah. I mean,
she doesn't have an arc.
It kind of seems to be this, you know, this game's attempt at a claptrap.
Right. Yes. That is, oh man, horny claptrap. God help us. Jack Black, you better not. So yeah, it was at that point, like I got the upgrades. I had played, you know, for maybe 90 minutes and spent, I don't know, 10 of those actually doing something.
Ugh.
And the rest of them just watching lore and snarky asides handed to me, shoveled into my throat, that I was just like, eh, okay, not worth. So
yeah, I didn't feel like you were
BioShock again.
You were in good hands, yeah.
So yeah, if they are setting up for a protagonist redemption arc, and this is actually a statement on the world being, you know, like you're supposed to not like all this stuff. It did not feel well enough constructed for me to follow along. So
based on everything that I've heard, like any attempt at an arc still resolves in the Edgelord is right, actually.
Yeah, that felt like where it was headed.
Yeah.
The one good idea in this game is instead of picking up inventory, you vaguely wave your hand at an area like cabinets, and they all just fly open telekinetically, and all the stuff that's interesting in them flies into your hand. That's a good idea. That should be in more games. I enjoyed that. Everything else, my eyebrows are still coming down from. So Atomic Heart.
I mean, the shooting that you did, or like, you know, it's BioShock, so their like powers, like, was that, did that feel good? Like, if you strip this down to wireframe and ignored the kind of gross aesthetic stuff, like, does it feel like there would be fun there?
Nope. Okay. Not even close. Like, there's one, they gave me one gun, which was a shotgun that could hold 3 shells at a time.
Ugh.
That's all I got. And that was at the very end. Before that, I just had an axe. And you don't do anything with the axe. You just swing it. The one interesting thing is instead of a sprint, there's a dash. And the androids, when they're coming at you, will sometimes flash red and you have to dash out of the way of a heavier attack.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the only thing that put any mindfulness into the combat.
Yeah,
an hour and a half invested for that is not enough.
That's way too much preamble. I mean, even BioShock and BioShock Infinite, like you're still doing stuff as in Infinite's case, as regrettable as that stuff might be. Like you're still doing stuff pretty quick. And in BioShock, like that intro is, you know what, like your 20 minutes of light interactivity before you get on the real cool splicer with the stroller, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm making this connection as you're describing it that way, but like the intro feels like an echo chamber, like it's and just back and forth over again. Yeah, this place is so cool. Yeah, I'm so edgy. Yeah, and they just, you know, there's no one there to tell them to stop and actually do something.
Yeah.
To be fair, you need an echo chamber to find the edgelord humor funny. So
yeah, this is everything's coming up edgelord.
Yeah.
Regrettably. Don't care for it. Play games on the Steam Deck. Don't play Atomic Heart. Not that you could on the Steam Deck. Oh, actually you could. That's the other quote unquote mod I installed. I got xCloud streaming.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can do the normal Xbox app and download stuff and play it locally too, as long as it's if it is a game that is verified to run you know, to be playable on Steam Deck, it doesn't matter what storefront you get it from.
Damn. All right. Today I learned.
Nice. It's a nifty little device, which I say only because we are being paid. Yeah. By little, I mean, it's like holding a boogie board.
I mean, by little. Yeah. I mean that you could bludgeon a full grown man with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, hey, it's a feature.
Yeah. Just
which is probably something you eventually do in Atomic Heart.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And that's me. That is me.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so this was spawned by something that was in the news. I don't know if anyone grabbed it as their end boss today, but Charles Martinet is retiring as the voice of Mario. He's staying on as an ambassador for Nintendo, whatever that means. But it got me thinking about just notable voices in video games. So what gaming character's voice will always be instantly recognizable to you?
Yeah. And I'll get started here with Peter, who says, this is going to sound weird, but Jaster Rogue from Rogue Galaxy will always be a voice that lives forever in my mind, possibly because of how much I played that game before I moved in with my fiance/wife 6 years ago. In case you're trying to figure out who that is, the character is voiced by Will Friedle, Eric from Boy Meets World. Whenever my wife watches her reruns of Boy Meets World, whenever Eric talks, I only hear/see Jaster. If you like that game, I apologize that it is, I don't apologize. It must be very hard to listen to Gary pull it up as the example of PS2 console RPG excess.
Oh no.
it is a pretty consistent whipping boy.
That's hilarious. This is a safe harbor for your Rogue Galaxy fandom.
Yeah, I never played it. It never looked like my thing, but yeah. Let's see. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Ron Perlman as the announcer in the opening and closing of the Fallout games. Just perfect.
Agreed.
I didn't know that's who that was.
That is Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman.
The voice actor never changes. So.
Ron Perlman, based as hell.
Mm-hmm. Are you referencing the video that he said recently where he's threatening to kill CEOs of the...
He's only threatening to burn their houses down.
Yeah, okay,
and not
fair,
even
fair,
threatening.
Fair.
He's just saying...
Promising.
You know,
he's just saying Cole, that this is something some Trump that level someone could
mental
do.
Gymnastics here.
Oh, man. Let's see. Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says, has to be David Hayter as Solid Snake. His gruff voice is so distinct, and I was so disappointed when Kojima decided to have Kiefer Sutherland play Snake in MGS5. It really wasn't the same. True.
True. I was still hoping for David Hayter's big boss to come back somehow in that. And no.
That costs money, Cole. You cannot have that expectation for Konami.
No, you can't. Yeah.
Sigh.
Let's see. Dennis, what does Callum say?
For my tabletop group, Minsk from the Baldur's Gate series, solely due to the significant amounts of mimicking and quoting around the table.
Minsk's accent is, I can't figure out what it is. Feels like Russian. Anybody else played Baldur's Gate and knows Minsk's? I don't know what they're going for. Yeah.
It's, mysterious? I don't know.
Maybe. David writes, Nolan North for sure. Not only has he voice acted a ton of games I played, but he also voiced the human males in Guild Wars 2, which I played for many years. Wow. Like, that is funny for them to pull that. That had to be like right on the edge of when he became super recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was, when did that come out in relation
2011?
Because Saints Row 3 had a whole bit about like, there was an entire voice setting that was just Nolan North.
That was Saints Row 4 that had the...
Oh, yeah, was it? Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
They started the jumping of the shark in 3, and they firmly were in the air in 4.
I like those games. Yeah, I remember jumping the shark
yep. as if it was bad.
No, just mean literally there was a part where you jump a shark.
Uh-huh. Let's see. David, what does Case say?
As a side note, we missed, I think Jeremy. We missed him.
Yeah. What does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, Deckard Cain from Diablo 2 spent way too many hours playing as a teenager. Stay a while and listen.
Is that what he sounds like?
I am very, very bad at doing impressions, but that was my best case, and it is, Deckard it is Cain tonight. Is a very good call on this.
David does one impression of himself very, very well.
is Deckard Cain, is that the like an ongoing, like it is he still around being like the framing device storyteller kind of guy even in D4?
He's in 1, 2, and 3. He is not in 4, although he does get a mention.
Yeah, there's like a whole bit about him in 4. He's important enough to the series that he gets referential humor.
Gotcha. Let's see, Ben, what does Case say?
Yeah, Alexander Case says, Varric Tethras, and his rich voice really sticks in my mind as one where I wouldn't necessarily quote his dialogue, but I can recognize the voice immediately.
That is the dwarf rogue from Dragon Age 2 and 3.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. It is a good performance. Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, we've got another Case here. What does Case also say?
Other Case, Case 2.0 says, Grunt and Rex, and this scene in particular, and they link to a video, both of them saying Shepard is burnt into my brain. The video is Shepard sits down to acknowledge them, and they say Shepard. And she says, you know, Grunt, Rex, Shepard, Grunt, Shepard, Rex. And they just go back and forth like that for a solid minute before she gets up. Grunt, Rex, and they say together, Shepard. And she walks away.
Yeah, that's from the Citadel DLC, which is like really kind of reveling in a lot of the memes from, from the overall Mass Effect series. Playing on familiarity.
That got written late at night.
Well, I mean, just like the Shepard, it is a Mass Effect meme, so to have all of them doing it, yeah,
nice.
Yeah. Alex says, over here, stranger, what are you selling? Oh, I'll buy you for a high price. Thank you, come back anytime.
That's pretty good,
thanks.
Is it a Resident Evil vendor?
Yes. Yeah.
Hey,
there we are. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, it's a shame they didn't. I don't know if they, maybe they did bring that voice actor back. It's a, but it does feel different in the remake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to catch the magic of the first one, though.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted them to use the original audio compression and all for the remake. Oh, gosh.
Konami should have made that part of the remake, yeah.
David, what does Maniov say?
He says, the voice actor base is smaller in gaming, so there's a lot more recognizable crossover. One that I always enjoy hearing in minor roles is Keith Silverstein, probably most famous for asking you as Nazim in Skyrim if you get to the Cloud District very often. But what is he saying? Of course you don't.
I'll be looking up a lot of videos after this segment.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Ask him if you get to the Cloud District very often. But I don't understand. I feel like there's context that I'm missing. So sorry if we didn't. Yeah, didn't get it.
I hope someone gets this next one because it's just a bunch of quotes.
Yeah,
I was gonna shorten that one down because I don't know any of them.
do three of them, Ben.
All right.
What's Curtis first. Say?
But are these three from the same person?
Or are they three from different people? Yeah.
All right. So I don't know who this is. So I'm not gonna do a good job with this one. But die, monster! You don't belong in this world. Perhaps the same could be said of all religions.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
What is a man? A miserable little piece of secrets, but enough talk. Have at you.
Miserable little pile of secrets.
Who is this?
It is Dracula from Symphony of the Night.
Okay. Yeah. Of course.
Yes.
But Curtis finishes by saying, or a close second, thank you.
I don't know. Oh yeah, no, there we go. Hey, thank you. Yeah, there we go. Same one. Yeah. I didn't recognize it by the die monster, you don't belong in this world. But when you did the miserable little pile of secrets, I got it. So what is a man? Yeah. my favorite edit of that, because he does say, what is a man, and then throws a wine glass and then delivers the rest of it. There's an edit somebody did where the Belmont that you play as in that walks into Dracula's throne room, and he throws the wine glass, and then it just goes, fuck! it's so good. Oh, God. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Gwen say? Hi, Gwen.
Hello, Gwen. Gwen says Richard Horvitz as Rasputin in Psychonauts.
Oh yeah, there the main character. Sorry, I only know him as Ras, so it took me a second. That is really good. I love the aesthetics of that game so much. Let's see. Phil says, "Ooh, I've got one. It's a computer voice though. Reactor online, sensors online, weapons online." All systems nominal. I don't know what that is. People need to identify it. Like,
I'm guessing.
I know. I vastly, vastly overestimated our video game quote knowledge. I thought we'd be fine. Nominal.
All systems nominal. Know everything. All systems. I mean, it's the same.
My guess for this one is your computer and mech warrior.
Yeah, that's what it says. Yeah. Okay.
Aha.
Yeah, that's by doing a search.
Yeah, the one that's burned into my mind. Is it thermal shutdown engaged if you overheat, which I did a lot because I was horrible at that game.
Hi, Dottie. This is about the time Dottie hops up on the headrest of my chair. Let's continue. Let's see here. Jacob says, does Bruce Campbell, the disaffected tutorial narrator in the Spider-Man movie tie-in games, count? Yes, it does. That is a very good performance. Yeah. David, what does Tyler say?
Tyler says, Beetle from Legend of Zelda. Thank you. I have no idea who this character is, so I don't know if that's anything like his delivery.
Who is Beetle? God, why am I?
It's canon now.
Yeah, Beetle's. All the pictures that I'm seeing are from uh, from Wind Waker, the one Zelda game that I didn't play. Our batting average here is terrible.
Striking out tonight.
Ben, what does Brian say?
Brian says, I'm probably too late. You're not. But but Doug Cockle's Geralt is basically the voice of my inner monologue.
Hmm.
Fuck.
Nice.
This is hard because there are good performances. I'm just going to say Jennifer Hale is the female Shepherd.
Sure.
That's it. Like, as far as an ongoing voice acting project goes, like across those three games, very good. And just incredibly good work that she did there in characterization, badass and affecting and all of that. Hey David, how about you?
Man, this is a tough one. So I'm gonna do two honorable mentions that are probably more my thing, but then I'm gonna go with one that's a lot more fun to talk about. Lance Reddick as Commander Zavala. is amazing. And the British male voice from Saints Row is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. However,
I think I would have to go with the voice acting in the first Stalker game.
Buy something, why don't you? Or what is that? What is the line that keeps getting repeated when you're standing in the
I said come in. Don't stand there.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Buy something, why don't you?
People who haven't played, as far as I can tell, they set up that line to play when you enter a doorway of, one of the inns, but they don't set it up to only play once. So if you just stand in the doorway, you'll literally repeat it. Just, I said, come in, don't stand there. I said, come in, don't stand there. Also, as far as I can tell, they were this, a lot of the writing was like, maybe what Ukrainian developer thinks like Americans talk like, because there's a ton of the characters are just like, hey, what's up, my bro?
Yeah, that's us. They got us down, arrested. Oh my gosh. How do you feel about Keith David doing recasting as Zavala?
I actually haven't heard it yet.
Oh, I don't know that character, but that seems like a good fit. They are a similar caliber of actor, I think.
No, yeah. I could definitely see that. Yeah. And he's a character that, despite being the straight man, is very much a comedic character.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I feel
he's an Abbott.
Huh?
He's an Abbott.
Yeah. And I feel like he's someone that can do both comedic and dramatic, which I think, that's definitely what you want from that.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to give it to Knights of the Old Republic, but in particular, there's two that stick out to me. The HK-47 voice is unlike any other. And then a shout out to Jahani for the line, I will be your doom, will just periodically pop into my mind every now and again. So.
Nice. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. For me, this is going to come out of left field. It is Tiny from CTR, like the giant tiger.
Oh, Crash Team Racing. Yeah.
Yeah. Crash Team Racing. Specifically, he's got one line. Tiny the Tiger in CTR worked an R into OK way before the O crowd or whatever, he just yells, oh, cray, in a way that still internally, whenever I think OK, involuntarily, echo that as, oh, cray.
Oh, cray, huh?
Yeah.
Weird. Usually it's the British who add superfluous R's to words that don't
usually on the end. This one's in the middle. It's just go figure.
Gnar. Yeah.
those are Australians right there. R-nar.
Thank you, folks, for writing in. If you would like to be the folks who wrote in, you can watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons at the Duckfeed Community Facebook group. And thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Let's see, who do we want to go with first? Dennis, you have the like the one related to the big video game announcement event going on.
Yeah, and it really is just an announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
Killing Floor is getting another game. Killing Floor 3.
Cool.
Yeah, that was my reaction. That is kind of the zombie shooter co-op game. It captured Left 4 Dead energy at a time before literally everyone was capturing Left 4 Dead energy.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of filled a gap in that genre in its prime. So I'm excited to see him bring it back around. The trailer for it, just like trigger warning, is hyper gory.
Yeah.
Like they really luxuriate in showing this evil monster being created by being ripped open and having metal rammed inside of it. So it's on the level of like a Mortal Kombat fatality, just creating something instead of destroying something. No other information. It's coming next year, I believe. You can wish list it, but not buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as a co-op shooter, always down for that. And one that I think was pretty early in getting the live service and ongoing character development stuff right before it was turned into something completely inaccessible.
Yeah,
Killing Floor is up there in my mind. So looking forward to the third entry.
Man, like the gun feel in Killing Floor is super good.
Oh yeah,
is it the same developer that did Black?
They did Red Orchestra. Was their other game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if we've talked about it before, but yeah, what they have a weird thing where the gun animations are the frame rate for those is completely detached from the frame rate for the rest of the game.
So they can get it perfect.
Right, exactly. And like when you get perks that increase your reload speed. They don't just make the reload faster. You actually use different techniques to reload.
Oh, huh.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a love letter to weapons
to
right there.
Guns.
It's guns. Yeah.
USA.
Actually, I don't know where it takes place.
In UK traditionally.
Hmm. Okay, so there's at least one level that's very farmhousey. So, go figure.
Let's see, Ben, what's this weird, I don't know what Love is Blind is, so explain it.
Yeah, this is more of like me like coming out to you guys that I watch Love is Blind on Netflix.
Hey,
so
same here. That's my guilty pleasure.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's just like this trashy dating show that, it's run by Nick Lachey and his wife, Vanessa Lachey, I think.
I used to know this.
Like a dating show where all the people are blind.
That would be as interesting or more interesting, but no. Instead, what they do is they put people in separate rooms and they have to decide to marry a person sight unseen to determine the age-old question, is love blind? Which they bring up in like every episode after
it
that.
It's very Pokemon-like, the frequency with which they say it.
They say it a lot. I
didn't know Nick Lachey, Cincinnati, stalwart, and Vanessa Minnillo were involved. I had a bad experience with them when I worked at that radio station that did Reading for the Blind. Christmas times, they would have local celebrities come in and
they kept asking if Love was blind.
they were really, really hung up on it. This was back in like 2009 through 2011, I think. So yeah, it would have been like around there. And they were they seemed above it. They were unpleasant to me. They acted like celebrities, and that is not a good thing to me.
Yeah.
Totally.
We'll
see just
that.
Say they. I mean, obviously they're held up in a rosy light because they're the hosts of this show, but they are not well liked yeah, the way they interact in some of the reunion stuff, like it's pretty cringe, some of the stuff that they they do.
So they're making a game based on this.
Yes, keeping us on the rails. Yeah, the point of the story is that there's a new season coming out at the end of September, and then co-launching with the new episodes is they're putting a game on Netflix where you can RP as a contestant on Love Is Blind.
Okay,
so I'm guessing Netflix is just shoveling a bunch of money their way because, like, a lot of people are watching the show.
Yeah.
It's one of their most popular originals.
Yeah, I guess so. And, yeah, it's like season 5 is what's coming out. Season 4, the last one, took place in Seattle, so that was kind of interesting to watch. It's like a sidebar just to see, like, the locations that they were at and stuff like that.
Like, this seems like a premise where it explicitly doesn't matter where it's set.
That's a good point.
Different people from different places.
After they decide to get married, though, then there's like a whole other thing where they'll like go on dates and live together, and there's like comments. Same formula every season or whatever, but those types of things need to take place like in an actual real world setting.
It's very weird that marriage is the stakes.
Yes, it is. So Jen and I watch this together and freaking love it. We joke that it's relationship flashcards.
Okay.
You just get to see people in rapid succession just do like, oh, you know, she was feeling this way and expressed it this way, and that led to this happening. And like, you know, you're watching everyone fuck it up terribly in real time. as we're like, oh, I would have communicated that differently.
Just pulling red flags out of their pocket like a fucking magician's hanky.
So are you not allowed to just ask like, what do you look like?
Oh no, there was a character there. A character. God, I hate reality.
That's characters.
There was a contestant that was like, he's like, so I love going to concerts, and when I'm at a concert with a girlfriend or you know someone I care about, I like having them up on my shoulders. Do you feel like I could do that with you?
Oh no.
Yeah.
Cringe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Woof. Yeah. I got this mixed up with Dating in the Dark. Ooh. is what I got that mixed up with.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's all trashy TV though. It's like
there's plenty wrong with it, but it is junk food. It is designed for people to get hooked on.
It is people hoping to get internet famous.
Yeah, yeah.
Jumping in and doing terrible things for our amusement.
Yep. Huh. Well, I don't know that I have anything more to say about that.
Game adjacent FTW.
We just keep on talking about the show, not the game.
Yeah.
I can only think of the, like, I see these mobile game ads from time to time where it's like, you know, oh, you know, it sets up some like soap opera scenario, and it's like, do you leave him or do you tell him you're pregnant? And it's like, you make the choice. I have to imagine it's something like that.
Yeah.
I will say. I am very won over by a screenshot of the game where it's somebody named Natalie, but it's not spelled the way you would ever guess it was. And it says, I think I want to meet. And the options are Danny, Blaze, and Nico. It's like,
oh, man.
Yeah. Let's go with Blaze on this one.
You steer clear of Blaze. That's an American gladiator. You're going to get put in the ball.
I want to meet Blaze. Blazer. Blazer.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, you're gonna have to run the eliminator on that. Yeah. Anyway, I've got one. This is so a fan production just recently launched a demo for a PS1 style survival horror game based on Twin Peaks. It is on itch. It's called Twin Peaks Into the Night. I need to stream it, although I don't know if I want to start it this weekend. Maybe I will. I don't know. I wanted to start something longer. People don't need to hear me deliberate this. It's a demo, a look at a larger thing. You're playing as Dale Cooper, and you're doing like less survival horror stuff, but more like based on the write-up that I read, more like adventure game stuff in the fixed camera angle survival horror kind of model, you know. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty neat. This is more just like a thing happened, but Twin Peaks has had a huge influence on games, and to have a fan project that seems to be really well put together seems worthwhile, especially after the very disappointing Twin Peaks VR.
Yeah, this would looks like something that would show up on here we go. Yeah, because they actually are the team that does the PS1 demo.
Yeah,
horror games.
Yeah, it's haunted PS1.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Very cool.
Yep. So good, folks. Looks like a neat project. I need to go for it. David, how about you?
My news story is that Dragon Con starts next week.
Nice.
And that is definitely not just an excuse for the fact that I'm rushing to get ready for Dragon Con and therefore don't have anything prepared.
Well, where will you be at Dragon Con? Let's say someone is there. Can they find you?
So I'm going to be... We're going to be teaching, I think, one class. We haven't quite decided if it's going to be probably either teaching Eight Pieces of Brocade, which is a style of Qigong, or maybe Nihonshi, which is an important karate kata. And then we're also going to be doing a demo for the Silk Road Expo. So we're going to be doing a choreographed fight scene, and then I'm going to be demonstrating a Tai Chi sword form.
Sweet.
And then also I'll just be, you know, running around dressed up, you know, probably as a cat boy or something.
Cool.
As one does.
As one does. You know, it's Dragon Con.
Nice. Well, that sounds like the episode to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 470. We appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can leave a rating or review. You can tell some friends. Come back next week or go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick in some money, get a bunch of bonus content from the network. It's all good. I'm getting way too quick at doing this. So... trying to think. Oh yeah, Labor Day week here in America. We're not going to have an episode, so that is both for the benefit of people here on the call, and also for you as a listener. Go enjoy yourself at the end
Eat
of summer.
A hot
there,
dog.
For God's sake. Dennis, you got anything? Anything you want to promote?
Just getting Deck of Wonders on Amazon. It's kind of been a nice steady drip of sales. So, you know, it's not gone yet, but make sure you get yours before it is.
Cool. Well, I think that's everything. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me playing Sleeping Gods.
I'm David Mysmith. You can find me at Dragon Con.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. Who has titles?
I've got two.
Okay.
I first have We Said Short, Not Clean. And then I have Congratulations, Honey, It's a Demon.
I'm going to stylize that one without a comma.
Okay.
I like both of those. I have one. I have Just Add Violence. talking
what,
about
the, what's
the
context of that?
That was the metaverse talking about Fortnite being.
Okay.
Yeah. Dennis, what you got?
I've got two. I've got Trying to Wake Up Grandpa with Blood.
Okay.
And then I've got The Level Flesh House.
Man, do we want Flesh House? It's all one word because that's awkward because it has two H's in a row.
Yeah, I think
that is fitting with the content of how we want people to feel when they say flesh house.
Flesh house. Yeah.
What's a flesh house? Have you ever seen two H's together? It's like that.
Should I camel case the H's, do you think?
What's more awkward?
Yes.
You should make the first H capitalized and the second one lowercase.
Wait, you've never heard of camel case?
He's not a programmer.
So if you concatenate two words, if you push them together, gamble case would be where if the second word was capitalized.
The first one's lowercase.
There's
another one, I forget the word for it, where everyone's capitalized, like so including the first word.
I take no responsibility for anything I say until Dragon Con is done.
Okay. No, that's Ben, what you got?
I got two. I got one that was, it's way more fun to be a victim. Which is an exact quote talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And the other one's one I said in my head.
Whatever you're into.
The other one I said in my head, it's the case of two cases.
Congratulations, honey. It's a demon. Seems to be the, by laughs, seems to be.
Yeah, it got me again. So yes.
Okay. All right. Any opposition?
Mm-mm.
All right. It is decided.